I want to welcome everybody to the Dignitary Podcast. This is my first official podcast. I don't know a whole lot about podcasts. I know a little bit about radio. Was on 620 WDAE for 15 years. I'm now presently on the Bone 102.5, and I have my Sunday show from 11 to 1, having a wonderful time. And I just had a lot of time to think about different things. And that 2 hours that I have on Sunday isn't enough to get everything that I want out. So I thought it was a good time for me to start up a podcast and talk about some other things that I missed discussing when I used to be on the sports radio show. You know, my new show is a little bit more about, you know, fashion and nutrition and food. There's a little bit of sports involved as well. But, you know, we're not really delving into sports like I used to like to do way back in the day. So this is Dignitary Podcast. This is going to be where I kind of vent on a lot of things going on in sports in the area, and not just in the Tampa Bay area, all around, mostly the NFL and really anything to do with sports, because, you know, I do love hockey and I do love baseball and basketball and the whole nine yards. So basically, we try to do this every Monday, once a week, get out there and discuss little things that happen in the sports world. I have my boy Will Kuntz in the house. How are you doing, brother?
Hey, Ian, I'm good, man.
First of all, I appreciate you helping me out with this podcast thing. I know absolutely nothing about podcasts. You have your own podcast, correct?
I do. I do the Homemade Broadcast, and we're stoked to have you on HMB Radio. This is really awesome. I'm glad you're doing it with us. I'm here to teach you all you need to know.
Well,
you're going to be a podcasting whiz.
I love it. I'm coachable. That's been proven on the radio. That's been proven on the football field as well. And I'm here to learn and spit some knowledge as well. So, you know, I want you to help me out a little bit as we go along. The Buccaneers have a big game tonight, actually, and we are taping this Monday afternoon. They have a big game tonight against the Carolina Panthers. Carolina Panthers, who are struggling and without the great Cam Newton, who I did predict at the beginning of the year that Cam Newton wouldn't make it through the year without getting beat up, and he's been getting beat up so far. He went through the concussion protocol and failed, I guess, or didn't pass the test, so he won't be playing tonight, Monday night. I know that's going to kill him. You know, he likes to be in the limelight, and that's where he's at his best. And you'd like to say that, hey, the Buccaneers have a great chance to win that game, but, you know, their backup quarterback, Derek Anderson, has started two games in his career, both against the Buccaneers, and both times beat us up pretty well. So I'm hoping that the Buccaneers can fight. They haven't been fighting as of late, but I'm hoping they can go on Monday night and at least represent themselves.
Yeah, totally. Derek Anderson is the Buccaneer killer. Him and Jake Delhomme, I remember, used to just beat us up constantly. So we'll see. The Carolina defense has not really lived up to expectations this year. I don't really know why. Is it free agent, you know, leavings, or what's the deal with that?
Well, I mean, every year is different, you know. Every year is different. It's hard to come together. And when you make it to the Super Bowl and lose, you got to start over again. You got to hit reset. So it's not like the next year you're automatically going to go to the playoffs. You know, you see teams sometimes that are about 6-10, 7-9, 8-8 for years and years to come, you know, over and over, because it's hard to take that next step. And, you know, the Buccaneers still got to get to the point where they're consistently .500. They're not that right now. Last year they were 6-10. You thought that they were heading in the right direction with that regime and Lovie Smith. But then when you change regimes, okay, now you have Dirk Cutter as your head coach. You were 6-10 last year. You were supposed to make this move to get better. You know, what happens if you go 1-5, 1-6? You know, some of these players that used to be Lovie Smith guys, you know, might be looking at Dirk Cutter every once in a while and saying, you know, that was our guy. And you were supposed to be the guy coming in here with a lot of knowledge. And it doesn't seem like this team has really changed much. I know, Will, you've watched the Bucs for a while. But to me, the Bucs look like a team that they have been for the last few years. They don't really have an identity offensively. They don't rush the passer well. Their DBs are struggling, and they seem to get too many penalties. I mean, do they look any different than they have been the last 3 years to you?
No, not really, and it's frustrating. I know they had a really tough schedule coming in here. You had that hope in that first game versus Atlanta where they really kind of beat up Atlanta pretty good, and Atlanta seems to be a good team from what I've seen. They rebounded from that first loss and went in and beat Denver yesterday in Denver. a team that Tampa had played the week before and got mollywopped. Mm-hmm. So it's I have hope. I know they're getting better, but I think the schedule has been a big hindrance to them, and the defense, the secondary is a problem.
Well, the secondary is god awful, and yeah. Listen, I've played the game for quite a while, and I know what it looks like. You know, when I'm watching the Bucks defensively, I don't see it, okay? You know, we used to have it for 10, 12 straight years. When I mean it, it means that look of a championship side of the ball. And defensively, I don't see it. Offensively, I don't see it either. You know, the great Tony Dungy, who I had the benefit to play under for 1 year, a very knowledgeable young man, I think we all know that. He turned the whole thing around here in Tampa Bay. You know, I had him when I was on 620. We interviewed Tony Dungy, and I said to him, I go, Coach, let me see what your answer is. What would you rather have, great DBs or a great pass rush? And he said it within 1 second, a great pass rush, Ian. That's the most important thing defensively. And when I'm watching other teams, okay, I see it, unfortunately, when I watched Atlanta just demolish Denver yesterday. And I'm not talking about the score. I mean, they didn't kill him score-wise. But Atlanta really got after Denver, really on both sides of the ball. Now, Denver's defensive rush is still amazing, and they have fantastic football players over there. But when I'm seeing guys like, you know, Dwight Freeney and Adrian Claiborne, you know, out there rushing the passer, I'm thinking, man, what are we doing? Because I've been begging for Dwight Freeney, I don't know for how long, just for his attitude and his leadership, veteran leadership. I don't know if we have enough veteran leadership on our defense. And I'm watching this Atlanta team, and they look mean and nasty, okay? And I've been asking for that for a long time, and mean and nasty is not something you can just develop as a football player. I think mean and nasty players are born. I see Quan Alexander, he got a little mean and nasty in him, but defensively, that's the only mean dude I see out there. And you're right about our defensive backs. Our safeties, and Conte may be the biggest culprit, they suck, okay? Our safeties may have 10 tackles a game. That just means the ball is being caught by their man all the time. Our corners are not very impressive. They're very young and inexperienced. And our pass rush is non-existent. Now, Gerald McCoy's out. And, you know, I've been one guy that's been after Gerald McCoy. Gerald McCoy's a good football player. But, you know, for somebody to say that they're great, and I hear that said about him, you got to make more damn plays to be great in my world. And the unfortunate part for somebody like Gerald McCoy is, you know, all I know is to, you know, compare him to what I used to block way back in the day. And, like I said, unfortunate for him, all those guys that I used to block are going into the Hall of Fame right now. Okay, so, you know, whether it's, you know, John Randall and Reggie White and Howie Long and Chester McLaughlin, that's who I'm comparing him to. And he's not wreaking havoc like that. And the most important thing in football is to be on the football field, okay? And he's missing the game tonight. I'm not saying he's not hurt. I'm sure he is hurt. But you have to stay on the football field. That's the most important thing. And there's a few players in the NFL that I have on watch, okay, because it's hard to stay healthy. I've said, forget about playing. It's hard enough to be out there and compete against the best in the world. It's hard to do. But to stay healthy and stay on the football field is very, very hard. And there's a lot of people on watch right now that I don't know if they're going to make it, okay? And it, all for different reasons. And will you let me know if you disagree with some of these? J.J. Watt, to me, is one of the best football players I've ever seen, okay? I've said this, if this has come out of my mouth, J.J. Watt is better than Reggie White. I played against Reggie White. Reggie White's going to Hall of Fame. For a little bit of time that J.J. Watt has been healthy, I think he's better than Reggie White because he makes more plays, okay? Now, Reggie White was fantastic. That's not a diss to him whatsoever. But when you talk about somebody missing some time and having a back surgery and then coming back and then missing the whole year for a back, you have to start worrying about their health in the future. I don't know if he comes back as the same football player.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing with the comparisons with these older players is that the talent gets better every year. The game changes mm-hmm. year to year. You get more physical. It's just human evolution.
See, I have to disagree with you because the guys that I talked about are way more physical than most of the people playing now. Okay, like, you could tell you like J.J. Watt is kind of an anomaly because he's out there and he's going hard all the time. I don't see a lot of guys playing like J.J. Watt. Like when I played, it seems like, you know, guys like Eric Swan and Leon Lett and Dan Wilkinson, those aren't Hall of Fame players, but they were, you know, on every single football team had these defensive tackles. And I think the evolution, the guys are getting bigger, but I think the guys are getting softer so much because I never heard of guys missing games because of a sore shoulder or a sore calf and stuff like that. The mentality is a lot different now than it was back in the day.
You wouldn't agree, though, that people aren't stronger and faster now?
Yes, I think they're stronger and faster, but not meaner. Okay, the game is changing. There was a lot meaner people. Okay, like SOB, you're not allowed to be an SOB anymore in the NFL. Okay, you're not allowed to. You know, there's guys that are Lyle Alzado, okay, Conrad Dobler. People look, you know, at Ndamukong Suh and they're like, oh my God, he's terrible. No, he's fantastic. You want a guy with that attitude on your defense because you can't, your defense can't be run or it can't be led by a nice person, okay? Ray Lewis didn't play nice, never. Mike Singletary didn't play nice. Brian Urlacher, the leading of that defense. Even guys like Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks got in people's faces. Who's our guy on defense that's already established that's able to have that type of mentality and have people following him? I'm telling you, Quan Alexander is that guy if he stays healthy down the way. But even guys like Levante David, I'm definitely going to put Jared McCoy in this situation. They're not mean enough, okay? It's about attitude. We had, you know, even Simeon Rice had attitude. John Lynch had attitude. And if you keep on going down the way, we had confident attitude, and I don't know if we have enough guys on defense. Jared McCoy, like I said, he plays well. He can't be the attitude of the defense. And Quan Alexander might be that guy down the way. And Levante David, just like Jared McCoy, is very talented, but doesn't have that mentality that everybody follow me, I'm Billy Badass. I don't know if we have that guy.
I wonder if this is a cultural thing because now everybody, you can't be mean anymore. Agreed. You're not allowed to be
mean. Agreed.
And I wonder if these kids now, I mean, I'm 31, so most of these players are probably younger than I am, grew up with this no bullying, no being mean on the internet, or you get in trouble. I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
Not on a football field, no. That has no – having been in, you know, locker rooms and meeting rooms forever, okay, I've been playing since I was 7. I played up till 32, I believe. So I think I've been in a lot of locker rooms, and that mentality will never come in a locker room, never. Let me tell you about that whole thing with Richie Incognito and the young man that ended up going to San Francisco. I can't think of his name right now.
Is it Jason Smith or something like that?
No, the defensive lineman, the offensive lineman. Anyways, Richie Incognito allegedly was bullying him, okay? When that came out, the first thing I said was impossible. There's no such thing as bullying in an NFL locker room. That's not bullying. That's survival, okay? That's the culture. I've never seen somebody not get bullied in an NFL locker room. That's what it's about. You can't tell me that there's bullying when 5 minutes from now, if you are a defensive lineman and I'm an offensive lineman, okay? 5 minutes from now, we're going to have our hands on the ground and be butting heads, okay? There's nothing more macho than that. I mean, that makes bullying come out, okay? That's guaranteed. If we're about to fight, okay, bullying is what we're supposed to do. It's part of the game. So if you think you're going to take bullying out of an NFL locker room, it ain't going to happen. And I'm telling you what, back in the day, way older than you. I'm 49 years old. I'm almost old enough to be your father. There was no such thing as bullying, okay? There just was people talking crap. And what happened was you either took it, or you dotted somebody's eye, and then you might get your ass whooped. You might not, but I tell you what, most bullies don't really want to fight, okay? And you're completely right with the mentality now. And Ndamukong Suh would have just been a player back in the day. Now he's the dirtiest player in football. But there's guys in the Hall of Fame that had that mentality, and I want that guy, and I'm looking for that guy in that Buccaneers defense because so far they've been a sieve. I mean, I haven't seen anything that's lasting really defensively or offensively. We haven't established anything as a Buccaneer group for us to put our hat on. Like, this is what we're good at. We're good at running the ball. We're good at protecting the passer. We're good at rushing the passer. We're good at, you know, our DBs are good. When I'm watching teams like Denver, boy, Denver and Atlanta, they had a lot of legitimate football players all over the football field, and it seems like the Bucs lack the amount of legitimate football players out there. We have one or two here, but this, I don't see them enough.
I thought in that Broncos game that the defensive line did a pretty good job.
They did.
I felt like that was the only thing that kept them in that game because everything else was abysmal. And I know Denver has a very, very good defense, but they couldn't really do anything offensively the entire game. And they're supposed to step up a little bit. This is the year they were supposed to – the offense was supposed to be better. And you just don't see it. There's not really any bright spots on the Buccaneers this year.
Well, I mean, there's you're right. I mean, right now, if you say who's the bright spot on the Buccaneers, I'm thinking of consistency. Okay, but one game, Lavonte David didn't have a tackle. Okay, Jerry McCoy got a sack and a couple tackles in the first game. Everybody's like, oh my God, he's gonna get. Well, it's gonna be on week five, and he still has one sack. Okay, so at the end of the year, every year it's like this is the year he's gonna get 15 sacks. And he's not got double-digit sacks, okay? So you are what you are. You know, back in the day when I played, Brad Culpepper used to get a dozen sacks. Chidi Ahanotu used to get a dozen sacks. Marcus Jones used to get a dozen sacks. And these weren't the main guys. So to be the leader of a defense, the head guy can't have 9 sacks, okay? And when I'm watching, once again, Dwight Freeney's, who we never pick up, I don't know why, Adrian Claiborne, who we just let go, Then we can get to the defensive backs. Our defensive backs suck, okay? The best defensive back in the NFL right now is Aqib Talib, okay? If he's not the best, he's top two, top three. And I'm watching him run around with a chicken with his head cut off, making plays everywhere. Then one week I got to see Mark Barron out there looking great. And I'm like, it's the decision-making, and it's what we're left with. Because, you know, a Hargraves, a young kid, you know, a high draft pick, sure, he might be good down the way, but all he is Aqib Talib when he was a rookie, and amongst a bunch of other people that can't really teach him what's wrong or right. And I think that's another thing, is that veteran leadership, I think the word leadership is overused in football in general, because leadership is not really somebody being boisterous and talking and all that stuff. Leadership is just doing things the right way and knowing how to prepare yourself. I don't know defensively if we have a lot of those players because, you know, I keep on bringing guys like Lavonte David and Gerald McCoy. Although they've had good careers, what have they been a part of? Like, what have they been a part of that has been successful? They've not had a winning season. Their defenses have never been highly ranked. Their defenses have never had a whole lot of statistics. So what do they know? Like, when I went to the Jets back in the day, and I walked in that locker room, and there was guys like Jumbo Elliott and Kevin Mawai and Keyshawn Johnson and Vinny Testaverde and Curtis Martin and all people like that. Those people have been through it. They know what it looks like. They know how to prepare themselves. And it definitely rubs off because the mentality was so much different when I was there as opposed to when I was here in Tampa. In Tampa, we had a bunch of guys that were fighting that didn't know how to win. And then Tony Dungy came here and he kind of taught us how we're supposed to win and lose. And he was 100% right. It's about accountability. It's about being in the right place at the right time, being early. Okay, that's the long and short of it, guys. You see a guy like Derek Brooks, and everybody wants to compare, you know, Lavonte David and Derek Brooks. Well, that's night and day to me. Derek Brooks made a half dozen plays every game. And how many times do we see Derek Brooks, the ball hit Derek Brooks in the chest? It's not like he's making spectacular catches. He's at the point before the quarterback is at the point visually. I saw Lavonte David get one of those picks earlier in the season. It reminded me of Derek Brooks. But Derek Brooks was so knowledgeable as a football player that he rubs off on everybody else. And the unfortunate part is when I'm hearing commentators like John Lynch say that Aqib Talib has one of the highest football IQs he's ever seen in his life or ever heard, that kind of stuff hurts me because that can benefit the rest of our football players. And I think they're lacking knowledge. And really, our coaching staff is not overly knowledgeable as well. We have a first-year head coach, and you know, Mike Smith is a good addition, but it's one of those things where I'm not sure where the leadership goes. And if they mess around and lose tonight, and you know, you go 1-4, it's hard to come back from that. And then you got to start reeling and worry about being 3-13 and, you know, and losing the asylum, because it's getting pretty darn close.
You know, the thing, too, that I think a lot of people are talking about is the fact that they knew the safeties were going to be an issue this year. I think everybody knew that, and they went ahead and spent that second-round pick on a kicker. The best kicker, supposedly, in college football.
I don't understand it, though.
What were they thinking?
Well, they weren't, because right now we have a lower echelon kicker and no safeties and no pass rush. And it's not, that doesn't mean that Aguayo is not going to be a great kicker down the way, but in the meantime, he may lose a couple of games for us this year. So when you're a 6-10 team and you have voids, you know, and holes everywhere, I don't know how you get a kicker. Because first of all, look around the league. There's not a lot of young kickers out there. And other than Sebastian Janikowski, who, you know, struggled his first year or so, there's just not a lot of high picks that ever amounted to anything. Go get a guy off the scrap heap that can kick a bunch of 40-yarders, because, you know, it's kickers don't win that many games for you. They really don't. But they seem to lose a lot. They seem to lose a lot. And it's a Aguayo kid. He got kind of a deer in a headlight type of look to him, to where this may be a little bit much for him. So I hope that's not the case. I just don't know how they can warrant that pick at this time, because, for God, we sure need more pass rushers, okay? I never thought Austin Seferian Jenkins was going to work. I never did. We sure could use another tight end, okay? We sure could use another wide receiver. And we got a kicker that we know probably is not going to be great in the first year. So Jason Light took a chance. And at the end of this year, if they go 4-12 and you took a second round pick on a kicker, he's going to have to answer, especially if that kicker, you know, is out there and not, you know, doing what he's supposed to do. And it's still early in the season, but to this point, you know, even a good kicker to this point, I don't know if we wouldn't have won any more games. So that pick, to me, is something he's going to have to talk about at the end of the season.
Yes, but I guess the maybe a positive thing about going 4-12 is you can get your really good safety in the first round next year for 2017. It's befuddling to me.
It's, what's crazy though is, you know, when you go into the draft, and every time May, I think it's in May now, every time the draft comes by, everybody says, "Hey Ian, what do you think about the draft? How do you think the Bucks did?" And my answer is, I have no effing idea. That's my answer, okay? Because nobody, I don't sit there and I don't evaluate these guys in college. And if you give me a list of athletes and football players that were effective in their rookie season, it's a very short list. Okay. When I mean effective at the NFL level. And I'm talking about, I started 16 games my rookie year. Okay. So I kind of understand what I'm talking about here. I started 16 games, but I wasn't good in NFL standards. I wasn't good. Okay. I was still learning. Rondé Barber didn't start his first year. Derrick Brooks wasn't that good in his first year. John Lynch didn't start in his first year. Warren Sapp wasn't very good in his first year. John Randall, Hall of Famer, wasn't very good in his first year. So it's hard to say, well, we got this pick, we're going to be better this year, because rookies are not good. Okay, even if they're going to end up being Hall of Famers, right now in the first year, they're not good. So remember that when the draft comes about. Because, you know, your rookies that you love and that were great in college, it usually takes them a while. I say the one position, I could say probably two positions that you can shine as a rookie, to me, are wide receiver and defensive back. And not so much safety. I could say safety. I know Barry was good in his first year. But those are not as physical as the other positions. You know, when you bring a defensive tackle in, sometimes it takes them a couple years to really get used to the physicality out there. But, you know, as a whole, there's a lot of things the Buccaneers need to do and need to get taken care of. They're going to get Jameis Winston killed because, you know, I understand we've been down in the last few games, but to have Jameis Winston 1 week throw the ball 58 times and the other week throw the ball 52 times, that's 110 times in 2 weeks. I mean, that equation is terrible, okay? You just you don't win a whole lot of games when you're throwing the ball 55 times a game. So Doug Martin is out. Charles Sims is out. We're going to be running that Rodgers kid tonight with the Carolinas. But If you make Jameis Winston throw the ball over 40 times tonight, the Buccaneers are going to lose that game going away, especially on the road. It's hard to hear. They're going to be all amped up. This is a must-win for them. So to me, the most important thing in that Buccaneers game against Carolina is running the football a little bit and shortening up the game, because I just don't think we're really equipped for a shootout.
Not equipped for very much at all, really. So yeah, a shootout's not gonna go in the Bucs' favor. Let's just put it that way. You gotta run the ball. Jaquizz Rodgers is totally capable of doing that. Let's see if the offensive line can hold up and allow him to do that. And pound the ball. I mean, Mike Smith is a running guy, right? That's what he wants to do, is run the ball.
Well, I mean, it's easy to say, and I think Dirk Cutter kind of says a little bit that he's a running guy, but it's hard to just run the football. It's a situational thing. The Buccaneers are still a very stupid football team that gets a lot of stupid pre-snap penalties, and when it's 2nd and 15 or 2nd and 20 or 1st and 20, it's hard to run the football. So. Especially when you're down in games as well. I've not seen the Buccaneers really just line up and, you know, put it in somebody's eye, okay? Just run it at them. I'm seeing other teams do that. Just lining up. Atlanta did it yesterday. Line up and put it right in Denver's face, okay? I love that as far as football goes, okay? That finesse stuff is great, but to me, just being able to line up and punch somebody in the face is the most important thing in football, and on both sides of the ball. I was talking about Denver-Atlanta game because I watched that through and through. Both those teams are rough football teams. I mean, Von Miller is a legitimate football player in any era. I don't care what. I mean, he's doing stuff that Lawrence Taylor, guys like that did, the guys that are in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's not a lot of present-day Hall of Famers out there. Von Miller might be one of them. And watching a lot of football, like I said, J.J. Watt would be one of them. And there's some good football players and some great football players sprinkled in there. Now, I was talking about on the watch. Here's another guys who are on the watch for me. Carson Palmer's on the watch. I don't know if his career – I think his career's in jeopardy. You're getting old and you're starting to get hurt. Adrian Peterson, his job's on the – Tony Romo, I don't know why you would put him back in there. For 2 games, Dak Prescott is amazing. For a young kid, he's making great decisions, and he's not just losing his legs, which he does use, which is, you know, adding to the offense. The kid looks savvy. He looks wise right now. I don't know why the Cowboys would put Tony Romo back in.
That's going to swing the momentum of everything if Romo comes in. I know Romo is a good quarterback, I guess. I was never a super fan of him.
Well, you know,
he was efficient.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I've always been a Tony Romo apologist, okay? But right now, I wouldn't take Dak Prescott out. I wouldn't. Now, a lot of people remember Tony Romo for fumbling in the playoffs and for losing playoff games, and that's really what he's about, unfortunately. And I know I've always been a Tony Romo apologist, so I went back and I looked at some of his statistics, and look at this. Tony Romo, for his career, has a 65.3 completion percentage, which is very high. 247 TDs, 117 interceptions. That's over 2-to-1 ratio, which is fantastic. Listen to some of these Hall of Famers. Terry Bradshaw, once again, Tony Romo, 65.3%. Terry Bradshaw, 51.9%. And Roger Staubach, 57%. Terry Bradshaw, 212 TDs and 210 interceptions. That's 1-to-1. And Staubach 153-109, so that's a little different, but not 2-to-1. So Tony Romo really has Hall of Fame type numbers. I don't know if he's going to get in.
He's got to win a Super Bowl.
Well, he's not going to win a Super Bowl because his body's not going to allow him to. Okay, because this is not me trying to be mean, but he can't take a hit anymore. Every time he gets hit, he breaks something else. Okay, so that's going to be a problem. So I don't know if Tony Romo ever has any good football left in him. That's when you got this young kid, big strapping kid in Dak Prescott. I wouldn't take him out. I keep him in there, and I roll with him because he's just going to get better as we go. And there's no reason to put an old guy that's going to be hurt in the next couple games. So let's hear a prediction for you from the Buccaneers game tonight. What do you predict?
You know what? I'm going to take the Buccaneers tonight by 6 points.
Wow. I mean, I would put your money on that if you could, if you got some. I'm going to go with logic, and I'm going to say the Buccaneers go 1-4 tonight, and I think that the Carolina Panthers will beat them in a high-scoring 30 games, something like that. I think it's going to be close. I just don't think the Buccaneers are going to be able to hold up. Anyways, it's been fun. It's been the first Dignitary podcast. Will, I appreciate you and getting this thing started. We're going to try to do this once a week, and you'll be able to hear my voice a little bit more. So pay attention. I'm going to let you guys know where to get it. And Dignitary Podcast is the first one. Everybody have a wonderful day, and please be safe. Peace out.